So, if you send a critical government alert into the European Union right now, and you issue it in, say, Danish, Polish, and Irish, 90% of the continent is going to have absolutely no idea what you just said. I mean, 9 out of 10 doors stay completely shut.
It's pretty staggering when you put it like that.
It really is. So, welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we are looking at a deeply researched article by Dennis Hedegreen from July 8th, 2026. It covers a project called Open Euro LM.
Yeah, and we are going to explore the actual reality of the European AI project.
Exactly. Because, well, there's this standard Silicon Valley narrative you see in your social media feeds, right? The idea that America builds the actual technology while Europe just builds regulations and press releases.
Right, with massive budgets attached to them.
But our mission today is to discover why judging the European project by those Silicon Valley standards just totally misses the fundamental reality of what's happening on the ground.
Well, the overarching narrative we see in the tech space, it relies entirely on evaluating products. Like when you assess the state of global technology purely by what immediately shows up on your smartphone or, in a web browser.
American labs look like they're just running the table.
Exactly. They ship tangible products. But to understand the European approach, we really have to look at the critical difference between building a tech product and building digital infrastructure.
Okay, product versus infrastructure.
The real bottleneck for European AI isn't a lack of computing power or even engineering talent. The friction comes from how a democracy actually goes about sharing its toys, its supercomputers.
Let's start with the baseline problem this project is trying to solve, because the author built a tool called 24 Doors to quantify it. And the data is pretty alarming.
It's a great tool.
I mean, the European Union has 24 official languages and no single universally shared language among all its citizens. So Hedegreen ran a test case using Eurobarometer data. If you send a public message stamped only with those three languages we mentioned, Irish, Danish, and Polish, and you set a strict threshold that the message must be reliably trusted by the recipient.
Only 10.3% of the EU27 can actually access it.
Which is just crazy.
It really forces a reevaluation of what is actually missing in the European tech stack. Like when nearly 90% of a population is locked out of a vital public communication just due to a language barrier.
That isn't a missing app in the iOS store.
Exactly. That is a foundational void.
But I look at that 10.3% number. And my immediate reaction is, well, I just look at my phone. I have Google Translate. I have DeepL already installed.
Sure.
Anyone can translate a website in half a second.
Yeah.
So why is the EU treating this like a catastrophic crisis that requires a massive state-backed AI project?
Well, casual translation is very different from trusted, legally binding public infrastructure. I mean, your translation app is fantastic for reading a restaurant menu in Rome. But it is completely insufficient for processing complex legal frameworks or cross-border health mandates or intricate tax compliance documents.
Oh, because if you get one word wrong.
Exactly. A single mistranslated technical term totally changes the legal liability of a citizen. Currently, every vital message that matters in the EU has to be manually translated by human institutions.
Which have to be incredibly expensive.
Immense cost and massive delays. And if the translation doesn't happen, the message simply doesn't arrive. This really highlights the core paradigm shift the author presents. America builds AI as a product. Europe is building AI as infrastructure.
And infrastructure is notoriously invisible until it works. Like, no one logs onto social media to praise a bridge for not collapsing during their morning commute.
Right, that's only ever noticed when it fails.
So if you view an ongoing infrastructure project through the lens of a Silicon Valley product launch, it just looks like an empty dirt lot with some scaffolding. You'd assume it was a total failure.
But the author actually went looking for this supposedly empty European basket and found something entirely different.
They found an exascale machine in active operation.
Yeah, the scale of the deployed hardware is massive. Open Euro LM is a project coordinated from Charles University in Prague with a 37.4 million euro budget.
Wow.
And the author's July 2026 audit found over 10 million GPU hours granted to this project. That's across four world-class Euro HPC supercomputers.
And the hardware list is heavy metal. We are talking about LMI in Finland, Leonardo in Italy, Jupiter in Germany, and Marinos from Five in Spain.
Right.
And that doesn't even include Denmark's sovereign super POD, Gefion, which is operating over 1,500 NVIDIA GPUs all on its own.
So they aren't just drafting white papers, they are running massive compute clusters.
Exactly. And looking at the public repositories, they aren't just taking an American model like Meta's Llama and, you know, fine-tuning it with a European flag.
No, they're using from-scratch pre-training code, specifically a Megatron LM fork. And there are already 40 model artifacts and 24 datasets sitting right there in public on Hugging Face.
And a critical element of that from-scratch approach is how they're handling tokenization.
Right? Yeah, they aren't just translating. They are fundamentally restructuring how the AI processes language.
Yes, the custom tokenizers. Let's dig into the mechanics of that, because this is where the infrastructure analogy really solidifies for me.
Sure.
Standard tokenizers, like the ones powering the big American models, are heavily optimized for English. If you feed the word apple into one of those models, it recognizes it as a single token, one computational unit.
But if you feed that exact same standard tokenizer a complex word in Hungarian or, say, Lithuanian, it doesn't recognize the word structure.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it ends up chopping that single word into four, five, or even six separate tokens.
Which means processing Lithuanian becomes five times more expensive computationally.
Exactly. It eats up the model's context window five times faster, and it severely degrades the AI's ability to reason over long documents in those smaller languages.
It's just a built-in mathematical disadvantage.
Right. So by building custom tokenizers from the ground up, Europe is attempting to equalize the computational costs across all 24 languages.
They are baking language fairness into the foundation before they ever run a benchmark test.
Exactly. They want a model that natively understands the linguistic structure of all 24 official languages fairly and deeply, which aligns perfectly with the goal of building the widest possible door rather than just, you know, the smartest test-taking model.
Let's do the math on those hardware numbers, though. Because if they have 10 million GPU hours granted, and a massive foundational model takes a couple of million hours to train,
they should be finished by now.
Exactly. Yet the author notes this glaring contradiction. The project's coordinator, Jan Haji, admitted publicly that securing the compute for the final models remains a significant challenge.
Yeah, it's a huge issue.
But if they have the hardware of a superpower and 40 models sitting there, why hasn't the final product officially shipped? How can both things be true?
Well, the bottleneck isn't the total volume of compute. It is a concept the author defines as contiguity.
Contiguity. Okay.
Yeah. The 10 million GPU hours are deeply fragmented. They are sliced up and spread across those four different supercomputers in four entirely different countries.
And it's not even homogeneous hardware. Looking at the specs, LUMI in Finland runs on AMD chips, while Jupiter in Germany uses NVIDIA chips.
Right. Which means you are dealing with entirely different software stacks, RSCM versus CUA.
So the engineering teams have to maintain two completely separate code bases just to utilize the time they've been granted.
Exactly. Furthermore, you cannot simply link these geographically separated machines together over the internet to train one giant model.
Why not?
Because the training of large language models relies on tensor parallelism that requires synchronous, rapid-fire updates across thousands of GPUs simultaneously. The bandwidth required is just astronomical.
Oh, I see.
If you try to run a unified training job across a long-haul fiber optic connection between Copenhagen and Germany, the sheer network latency, literally the physical speed of light through the glass, causes the entire cluster to stall.
Wow. So the GPUs just spend more time waiting for data to cross the border than they do actually processing information.
Exactly.
It's like trying to bake a single massive wedding cake, but you have four different chefs in four different countries, each baking a quarter of it. And they have to mail the hot pieces back and forth to each other to assemble it in real time.
That is a perfect analogy. It's functionally impossible. To train a world-class model, you need to hand a single project, a massive block of continuous compute, on a single homogeneous machine and just let it run uninterrupted for months.
Which Europe isn't doing.
Right. The author distills this perfectly. Europe has the hardware of a superpower and the allocation model of a research council.
Ah.
Instead of operating like an industrial manufacturing plant, they distribute compute time through biannual grants. They're treating AI development like a series of small, isolated science experiments.
Which brings up the defense often used for this system, right? That this slice allocation is a feature of democracy.
Yes, that's the argument.
The idea is that public, taxpayer-funded supercomputers should be shared among many different research projects, like climate modeling, cancer research, material sciences, rather than letting one single AI lab just monopolize the machine for half a year.
And it is a deliberate political choice. They prioritize breadth of access for the wider scientific community over the depth of contiguous runs required for cutting-edge AI.
But is it actually serving the public, though? If this so-called democratic sharing results in a fractured process where an AI model takes 3 extra years to build and is technologically obsolete the moment it arrives...
You haven't really delivered a public good.
Right. You've essentially just wasted millions of taxpayer euros solely to ensure every researcher feels equally included in the allocation process.
That is the exact tension the author is exposing. The democratic trade-off is valid in theory, but this specific allocation model was actually inherited from an older era of physics and material science grants.
Oh, it wasn't even designed for AI.
No, it wasn't consciously designed for the era of large language models at all. The technology physically demands contiguity. It requires massive unified blocks of time.
But the political structure demands fairness and equal distribution.
Exactly. The architecture of the technology is fundamentally at odds with the architecture of the bureaucracy.
And this friction between the reality of the engineering and the political messaging leads to what the author calls genre confusion.
Yeah, there was a massive PR misstep in February of 2025.
Right. The EU Commission announced that OpenEuroLM was receiving a STEP seal, which is a quality mark for strategic investment.
Right.
But in their press release, they described the project in the present tense. They called it the first family of open source large language models covering all EU languages.
The language implied it was a finished product you could literally download today. But the final models aren't scheduled for delivery until December 31st, 2026.
It's genre confusion. They are building infrastructure, but announcing it like a Silicon Valley product launch. It's like throwing a ribbon-cutting ceremony and hiring a marching band for a bridge when you're still pouring the concrete.
When you announce infrastructure as if it were a consumer product, you invite immediate backlash. People look at the announcement, search for the model, realize they can't use it yet, and immediately label the multi-million euro project a failure.
It just sets the project up for unnecessary ridicule, and it reinforces that false social media narrative that Europe only produces press releases.
Exactly. To combat that narrative, the author insists that infrastructure demands a completely different evaluation metric than consumer software. You don't judge a bridge by its launch day hype. You judge it by conducting a formal inspection against the load it was designed to carry.
So the author has essentially established a pre-registered inspection for OpenEuroLM.
Yeah, it's brilliant. On July 8th, 2026, they ran the 24 doors test, sent the message stamped in Irish, Danish, and Polish, and secured the baseline data that only 10.3% of the EU could reliably access it.
And they archived that result. It is the definitive starting line. There is an evaluation code checkpoint scheduled for July 31st, 2026, but the critical date is December 31st, 2026.
Because that is when the final models are scheduled to drop.
Right.
When that December deadline arrives, the inspection is simple. The author will take that exact same public message with the exact same 3 language stamps and process it through the new OpenEuroLM translation layer.
And the outcomes of that test will provide a definitive mathematical answer to what Europe actually built.
There are 3 clear outcomes. First, the doors open evenly.
The translation layer works across the board.
Right. If that happens, Europe successfully built the infrastructure and the massive hardware investment is validated.
The second outcome is that the doors open, but unevenly.
Right. Perhaps the Danish translation is flawless, but the Polish translation still fails the reliability threshold.
Which isn't a catastrophic failure. Rather, the test serves as a precise diagnostic tool, providing the engineering team with a literal map of which linguistic gaps require immediate computational resources.
Exactly. But the third outcome is that the December 31st deadline slips completely and the models don't arrive.
Oh, man. If that happens, all the excuses fade away. The conversation points directly back to that bottleneck of democratic compute.
It forces a harsh reckoning about whether a fractured slice allocation model can ever provision the contiguity required to build modern AI. The author notes that you do not build an inspection for something you hope collapses. You build it for something you need to stand.
The intent is to hold the infrastructure accountable to its actual purpose. So even if the initial release in December 2026 is flawed or uneven, it represents the pouring of a foundation.
It's an active construction site. The supercomputers are running, the custom tokenizers are mapped, and the artifacts are sitting in public repositories.
They aren't trying to outscore American tech companies on standardized reasoning benchmarks. They are attempting to solve a severe 24-language infrastructure gap for an entire continent.
Right. They are pouring the digital concrete, even if they keep tripping over their own grant allocation bureaucracy in the process. It forces us to reconsider the timeline of technological progress.
Because we have been conditioned to expect instantaneous delivery of perfectly packaged software.
Exactly. But building genuine infrastructure, ensuring that a citizen in Warsaw has the exact same reliable access to public information as a citizen in Dublin, that requires immense resources. It requires complex engineering and a timeline that doesn't fit neatly into a quarterly earnings report.
But this brings up a rather uncomfortable scenario for the European project. What happens if, midway through this slow, deliberate infrastructure build, a private American company, say Meta or an open source offshoot, simply brute forces the problem?
It's a real possibility.
Yeah.
Right.
What if an American lab ships a model that flawlessly translates all 24 European languages 6 months before OpenURLM finishes? Does that turn this entire European infrastructure project into a multi-million euro ghost town?
Well, that is the ultimate question of digital sovereignty. If an external private entity solves the translation gap first, the immediate utility of OpenURLM drops.
Obviously.
But relying on a foreign private corporation for the fundamental communication layer of your democracy introduces massive strategic vulnerabilities. The corporation could change its licensing, alter its pricing, or degrade the model's performance for smaller languages if they don't drive revenue.
Wow, yeah. So building the infrastructure internally ensures control, even if they arrive second.
Exactly. The debate becomes whether that sovereignty is worth the massive financial and temporal cost of the heavy metal and the fractured compute.
It's such a fascinating tension between speed and sovereignty. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the reality of the European AI stack. We hope this exploration of custom tokenizers, compute contiguity, and the 24 doors test gives you a sharper, more critical lens the next time you see a simplistic narrative about global technology in your feed. Keep questioning the assumptions behind the products we use, and we will see you next time.